The first, well, let's see. Our study lesson comes today from Proverbs 30 and verse 33. If you'd like to turn over there. I hope everyone got a worksheet. Everybody get a worksheet? Also, there are worksheets for next week up there on the podium as well in the back. Be sure and grab one of those before you leave today. Would appreciate it, and we'll put Dean to work next week. Let's look at verse 33. For the churning of milk produces butter, and pressing the nose brings forth blood. So the churning of anger or wrath produces strife. These are just end results of these actions here. So they used to use bags and so forth like that. Has anybody churned butter? Yes. How about any of you young folk churned butter? Well, yeah, you didn't hold up your hand though. Okay, yeah, I did plenty of that when I was young, not too many years ago. And we actually had a butter churn, and you take whole milk and you scrape the cream. You let the cream come to the top, and you scoop that off of the top of the milk, and you put it in this churn, and then you start this thing. We had was round, and you pour the cream in there, and then you start this paddle action. And you do that until the butter starts forming. And when that does, you scoop that up. And we used to have a ball. Mom used to put it in the ball and put it in the refrigerator. But that's how we did it in the old days, not so long ago. And but these people here, I think in our lesson, it tells about what they did to churn the butter back there. These people just had a method of doing that, and some of them still do it today, which is really surprising. But if you're nomadic, like some of these Arabs, the Bedouins that we have today, they don't have a home. Their home is on the road and in tents, so I'm sure they're deprived of electricity and so forth like that. So that ringing of wrath, and I don't know why Dean picked this particular lesson on ringing of wrath. Does anybody have any idea what that means, ringing of wrath?
It's from a much older translation, ringing of the nose produces blood. Some of the newer translations say, if you pound on your nose, you get blood. So when you ring the nose, you get blood. When you stir up anger, you get strife.
Yeah, it, I don't know. I used to have a guy that used to tweak my nose all the time. That's the first thing he'd use. These two fingers would go like this. Never brought blood, but it sure brought my anger when that happened. And, you know, when I was younger, I had a terrible temper. And I would fight at the drop of the hat. The only problem is I always got beat up by bigger people. And it took me a long time to learn that it's a lot easier to just walk away from something like that than to sit there and get your brains knocked in. And I still suffer from that to this day. I've lost teeth. I still have problems with teeth, even to this day from my teen years, because of my anger and willingness to fight at the drop of a hat. But I needed to learn not to pick on people bigger than me. Kind of was a hard lesson. But anyway, wrath, you can have wrath. You can be wrathful. But to translate that into and have somebody wring that wrath out of you, which now turns into anger, strife, which can be, you know, physical combat, physical attacks and so forth like this. So I had to think about this just a little bit, wringing of wrath. Maybe brooding over an injury or some injustice done to you and so forth like this. This can cause all kinds of problems for us if we allow ourselves to dwell on these issues. Somebody cursing you out, for instance. Your first, what's your first reaction? It's just to bounce back, isn't it? And that's something that we need to really work on. You remember Saul, King Saul, back in the days of David? And David killed Goliath. David led the victory. And as they were going back to their home base, they weren't in Jerusalem at that particular time. But when they were going back home, people came out on the path, the street, and they were singing. And Saul had his thousands, but David had his 10,000. And this really bugged Saul. And he brooded on this. And this went on for the rest of his life. He really brooded on this positive note for David, but a somewhat negative note for him. Why do you think Saul was picked on? Why did the Lord, wasn't the Lord with him? You remember why the Lord wasn't with Saul?
Because he did his own thing when the Lord said to go and conquer this country and totally annihilate them. And he said, old people said, I need to bring back the best of them.
He thought he did God's will, didn't he?
He thought he did. And then he said, I did it.
Yeah, he didn't see that. But he was told to destroy the Amalekites completely, everything, completely wipe them off the earth. All their goods, all their cattle, sheep, everything that was living was to be destroyed. So he went down there and he thought he did God's will, didn't he? But he came back with the best of the sheep and the cattle and even brought the king, the Amalekite king, back with him. And, I mean, it was a good thing, wasn't it? But he had instructions from the Lord. And, he didn't carry those instructions out. So scripture tells us that God's grace departed from him. And so this is the reason why he was in this brooding, situation you remember what happened? You know, David, he actually chucked some spears at him, didn't he? Trying to kill him. He even chucked a spear at his son, Jonathan, because Jonathan was friends with David. Tried to kill his own son. So this brooding just continually carried on until he just got violent. And so it was just eventually that strife came out. I got the idea. Okay. Yeah. I understand what the ringing of wrath. He was wrathful, but he let that go beyond that wrath. And, strife came out and he actually tried to commit murder, not only with David, but on his own son, Jonathan. But we can see how that, played out, in 1st and 2nd Samuel, and how Saul lost his life.
Here's one.
Yes, sir.
Just to sort of reinforce that, if you look at some of the newer translations, particularly the Contemporary English translation, Contemporary English version, it says, if you stay angry, you'll get in trouble. And I there's a lot of value in what you say. You cannot, just like if you take cream and you put it in the churn and you churn, you will get butter. Okay? It's a cause-effect kind of thing. And it's inevitable. If you harbor anger, you're just going to make trouble. And just like if you poke somebody in the nose, you're probably going to get poked back.
I can attest to that.
well, but I think the point is, if you live your life as an angry person, all you do is create trouble for yourself. Thompson told the story about a lady who came up to him one time and said, "Did you hear that? Sister so-and-so told me to go to hell. What should I do?" And the boy looked at her and said, "Don't."
Good. Yeah, great advice. Well, as just like tweaking your nose brings blood, then, you know, this negativism that you find with wrathful people, it comes out from time to time. And if you brood long enough, it'll absolutely destroy you. Everything is negative around you. There's nothing positive. Well, that's got to be a miserable existence. But I know of people like that. Yes.
I saw here the other day about a father and a son, and the son had a big temper, and you've probably heard this story before, but every time he got angry, he was supposed to go pound a nail into the fence. And eventually he figured out it was easier to control his temper than to be angry and have to pound nails. So then his father switched and had him take a nail out every time he took them. When it was all done, he said, "Now look at the fence. All of your anger, you cannot correct what your anger did. And it's not just yourself that is harmed. It's the people where you pounded the nail in that can have a permanent scar from your anger." So it's one of those things that you really have to work at control.
Now, I never pounded nails, but I stood in a corner, facing the wall in school more than one time. Which was kind of, I guess, the same thing. You take your anger out, or kind of makes yourself look foolish. And, but I was kind of hard headed, and it took me a long time to learn that. More than one time standing in a corner. But you know, you look around the world actually today. People may brood for years. Maybe some imaginable injury or a careless remark maybe by one of their workers, fellow workers or something at work. And all of a sudden, they carry this for so long, all of a sudden, they just go berserk and they grab a gun and they come in there and they start killing people. At the workplace or church building maybe, we've had some incidences of that as well in the not too distant future, but that imagining somebody may have said a careless word, even in being innocent of any vindictive comment or anything like that. But that person just brooded on that long enough, carried that wrath around with him, and all of a sudden it just turned into action. And we see that today. Kim? Yeah.
The wise man also said in, chapter 22 and 23, an angry man stirs up dissension, and a hot-tempered one commits many sins. A man's pride brings him woe, but a man of lowly spirit gains honor. And, you know, there's a lot in our culture to be angry about. You know, we have, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, this is righteous indignation. I'm angry at sin. I'm angry at some of the But I think what the wise man is telling us, especially in the verse that we're looking at right now, is if we let that motivate us, the anger, that even the righteous indignation motivate us, we're only going to cause strife around us. And so when I get angry, and I get angry, of course, we all do. When we get angry, I have to step back and I think, what good is going to come out of whatever action I'm considering taking? And that takes a lot of discipline that I've had to learn over the years. The older I get, the more I'm still young. The older I get, the more I'm able to manage that. And I look back on my life and I think the things that I regret saying and doing in my life came from a place of anger, which usually comes from a place of fear, because I've not put my confidence in the Lord. And I've not put my confidence in being the lowly and not prideful person. Sometimes it's pride that gets in the way. And as you said in you know, the 29th chapter that I referred to. And I like this verse because it's like Dean said, it is just it's a cause and effect. It's going to happen. So if we live our life in an angry state, everything around us, it's going to keep producing. It's going to keep, and everything is going to continue to make us angry. The people around us are going to be miserable. It's a miserable existence, like you said.
I noticed when you said you get angry, Dean winched a little bit. Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
You know, I was thinking about what Kim said, and, you know, through time, at least for me, you know, what it comes down to, it being, you know, if you get punched in the nose, you're hated, you turn into a good mother, the blinding flash of the obvious. What it took me was time to really learn that, if you want to call it righteous anger or righteous indignation, that there are parameters that go with that. In other words, the example that I would give is, everybody knows that Jesus got super chapped when he was in the temple and he started knocking over tables, and you know, that to the world would say, oh, well, see, I can just get angry and it's fine. But what we don't typically focus on, or what some don't focus on, is all of the ministry that Jesus did up to that point. In other words, that should be the last resort, but there should be parameters around your wrath. If I have a very specific point, maybe it always involves something sinful, then I need to focus on that. But if I let it brew and fester, and if I just fly off the handle for no good reason, then it creates and destroys, you know, you and everything around. So for me, it was that acknowledgement of, yeah, there are parameters around wrath. If I stick to those, because God gives them, if I stick to those, I should be okay.
Yeah, good thought. How about a hot-tempered person? You ever run across one of those? And somebody who's hot-tempered, boy, they can go berserk and just over an insignificant word or gesture or whatever. But I think we probably all run across people like this in our life and background. How would you handle a person like that, Margaret? Yeah, good. Yeah, Carol.
Mother came home from work one day, and she's about 25. Her mother was sitting at the kitchen table, and my mother was going off on her, and my grandmother looked up at her and said, I don't know who you're mad at, but it's not me.
Yeah.
We take it out on other people, even though it's not their fault sometimes.
Yeah.
If it's a direct person, you need to walk away, like Margaret said. But sometimes our anger is not at the person that we're venting, and they just got in the middle of it.
They just got in the way. Yeah, how about making irritating remarks to someone? Have you ever had anybody make irritating remarks to you? happens every day, just about, doesn't it? And you can choose to have that bother you, or you can choose to just ignore it or shuffle it aside. But you know, just insignificant to the side remarks can be, you just got to remember the person that you're talking to. How about that hot-tempered person? Boy, they just head out into space really quick, wouldn't they? So you've got to be really careful. Just a side irritating remark. Oh, you are so clumsy. You ever heard that? You must have 3 feet. You got your shoes on the wrong feet. You'll never amount to anything. You ever heard that? You'll never change. That's a good one. You're just like your mother. Or your father. I got that time or two. You'll never have anybody love you. You're so ugly. Or you're so stubborn. Or I wish you were dead. You ever heard that before? Yeah. I had my son tell me that one time. As I corrected him. And, oh, I hate you. I wish you were dead. That was a long time ago, but those remarks hurt, don't they? Just like barbs that stick in you. And sometimes they just don't go away. It just seems like your mind just puts it in a little category here, and every once in a while it pops up in your memory. I wish you'd never been born. You ever heard that? Yes, Dave.
Well, in my experience, the way that this plays out most of the time is, well, it's explained in psychology. It's called a hostile attribution to an ambiguous event. You come in the back of the church building.
Okay.
Big fancy term. Come in the back of the building, and you, because I wanted to say something to you, I kind of make a beeline for you, and somebody else thinks, well, he didn't talk to me. Wonder what he's got against me. He didn't talk to me. It's an ambiguous event, but because we're angry people, we let those ambiguous events become a hostile intent. And it wasn't there in the first place. But it does happen. And so a lot of times, you know, you have to be aware of it. I see this from both sides. If you're the person that is angry, check your anger, like Mark said, check your anger at the door. If you're the person who does something ambiguous and nothing is meant by it, be quick to admit, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to ignore you. I didn't intend to do that. I wanted to talk him on, and that's why I did that. So, a simple explanation goes a long way on the part of the person who somebody thinks has done something provocative. And we tend, when we're accused of doing something that we didn't do, I tend to respond with anger. You're accusing me of something I didn't do. Rather than just saying, oh, I'm sure that it was perceived that way. I'm sorry. I wasn't intending to do that. And I'll do better in the future.
Yeah, kind of smooths the water out a little bit there when you think about that. But yeah, a lot of times people will leave a group, maybe like today, thinking that they've been snubbed. maybe some visitors or something like that. We had somebody said something about our congregation being unfriendly. But the first thing they did when they got up is they went to that exit door and never gave us a moment of time to say hello even. But they perceived that we were unfriendly. That's really unfortunate that things like that do happen from time to time. Margaret?
But I needed to listen.
Yeah.
So I needed to listen to people. And that's why I
said, yeah. Okay. What about threatening and intimidation? See this going on today? United States is intimidating. They moved aircraft carriers and battle groups into the Mediterranean Sea just to intimidate, because they have the power and they're going to display it. Now, whether this in this particular situation justified or not, I'll leave it up to everybody else. But what about North Korea? Well, we're going to shoot off a rocket. You know, we're going to scare the South Koreans, or we're going to upset the Japanese. Russia, how about Russia? You know, they're always pulling the same kind of stunts. Iran, doing the same kind of stunts. You can look at the world today and you can see all of these various countries in various places for various reasons use threats and intimidation all the time. You see that every day, some kind of threat and intimidation. What about doing that to a person? Wouldn't that be easy to do, Carol?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it starts off with kids bullying kids, and it works because they're making them, they intimidate because they want power and they're taking it from the other person. They don't value the other person. And that just continues to escalate all the way through life. And God created everybody. Everybody is in God's image. And we have no right to have our wrath on somebody else. The only time when we were talking about it that Jesus had wrath was when God was insulted. He didn't have wrath upon the adulteress who was brought to him or somebody else who was caught in sort of sin. He had wrath because they were not honoring God. And that's really where our wrath should come into stuff.
Yes. Mark, did you have a comment?
I was just going to say that typically it seems like when there is intimidation, there's various reasons for it. But I think probably the main one is that the person who is intimidating, doing the intimidating, was looking for a desired outcome. For example, when all of my daughters were home and maybe a boyfriend would come over, you know, initially as a father, you want to kind of see how the young lad is going to react. And so maybe, you know, you come down without a shirt on, all bumped up, or come down with a handgun, whatever. But it's that intimidation because you want a desired outcome for, in that case, that concerned lad, so that that young lad would not do something out of line. So there's usually a reason, an action that the intimidator would see.
Yeah, and sometimes you get a reaction from the action too, don't you?
Exactly.
If you got somebody intimidating you, well, maybe you're going to pick up a big board or something, and you know, okay, come on, I've done that before. Yes, yeah.
I'm not a psychologist or anything, but from my experience,
there you go.
Intimidation, like Carol observed, kind of goes from a place of fear. It comes from a place of not understanding where we stand in this world. And I think as Christians, and this is sort of a position that I had to take, like in business, you know, when I was working in my career, is I would just have to step back and I just think most of the time I would think, you know, I just feel so sorry for you that you are in this position in your life, that you are so fearful, whatever it is that has made you so fearful of your standing in this world, that you're going to lash out at me or somebody else or be angry. And in my job, it was anger in the workplace, and I saw that a lot because of that work. And I would just pray for those people, because that is a hard place to be in this life. And that you're constantly lashing out at somebody else, constantly angry, constantly fearful, constantly trying to intimidate people to elevate yourself because you don't understand where you're standing. So I think most of the time those kinds of things, and I think the wise man kind of said that in the 29th chapter. It comes from a place of fear. You don't know how to humble yourself. You don't know how to, as he said, that your pride is what's causing this. You're prideful because for lots of various reasons. Sometimes it's loneliness. People are so lonely, and they're hurting. And so when we see somebody like that, I think we need to pray for them. And I think we need to try to figure out a way to calm their fear and their anxiety. And that's really hard when they're very prickly. It's hard to get close in order to do that. But it's a scary place for them to be, for them, a very scary place. And also for people who are interacting with them. To have somebody in your life that is so unpredictable, so they could fly off the handle at any moment for anything, and you don't have any idea why and why they're so angry and why they're so fearful and why they're in the position. It's hard to figure out.
We have an opportunity here to show people our good side and being patient with them, trying to be understanding. Talking about the strife and the wrath that goes along with it. Yeah, you remember, in the Old Testament, there was a guy named Shimei. Remember him? He was a nephew he was a relation of Saul's. And of course, Saul has been deposed. He's dead. And most of his family as well. David was walking along. He was being chased by Absalom, his son. And he was walking along this pathway with some of these warriors. And a guy named Shimei, who was this relation with Saul, they were Benjamites, ran along and was throwing rocks at David, kicking dust at him, trying to kick dust at him and this type of thing. And this guy had a death wish. I hear he was throwing, well, and eventually he did. It cost him his life, but he had he let his wrath, get the best of him. Then he went into strife and put that into action. And Abishai, who was the bodyguard of David, wanted to go over there and chop his head off. David said, no, be humble. This might be God's act. So we'll just let him do that. But he never forgot it. But he kept himself from taking revenge right there on the spot. You know, cursing sometimes. You know, you get people cursing at you or making bad remarks. You know, we're not immune to that stuff, are we? We're not immune to get our dander up, be upset with something like that. We're God's people, but we're not immune to that type of thing. We've just got to be careful that our wrath does not turn into revenge or reciprocating strife. We have to remember that. Some people, and I'm sure we've all run into this before too. We've been cursed because we're Christians. Made fun of, whatever. How do we respond to something like that? You just got to remember that God's on our side. And that's the key, I think, is how we respond to wrath and strife in our lives as Christians. Just, I think that's the key, is how we want to respond to that. We are, as Christians, we're blessed with what God has provided for us, and it doesn't make any difference what people do to us or say to us. God's power is much more powerful than any curse that somebody is going to do. And, through the cross of Jesus, that's where God has made provision for us. And God takes care and vindicates the righteous. And we just have to be careful about how we respond to things. We can't be, teasing. How about teasing and just in jest? Sometimes that can be pretty pretty painful, can it, Carol?
I heard something here the other day. It was the first, whatever the situation, but they said, well, how come you didn't react? And said, because I'm only here for a short time. And as a Christian, with knowing that God is eternal and that we have a life that's eternal, our time here is only a short time. And that's one of those little things that can sometimes help us. And I think learning to control your own, you can see it on somebody else. Like, I never liked my father's temper, and I can tell when I had my father's temper. So I can tell when, and I hear the difference, or I feel the clench in my jaw or whatever. And it's a matter of catching yourself before it gets control of you rather than letting it have control of you. I once had a student whose older brother was dyslexic, and he learned in the house. Bad behavior gets rewarded. You only get looked at if you do something bad. That's the easy person to be able to teach to not do something bad. But, the person that's all involved in it takes a lot, it's a lot harder for them to be able to revive.
Yeah. Mark, go ahead.
I will say that over the years, what I have learned is that my actions are in proportion or directly proportional to my relationship with my God. In other words, when my relationship is really strong with my God, my actions reflect that. I'm less likely to get upset. I'm less likely to lash out. And when it's not, and it ebbs and flows, and when it's not, what I've discovered that it's a lot descend into those.
I think one of the hardest things for someone to do is, and you really have to work at this, and I think you have to always have it kind of in the back of your mind, and that is, bless those who curse you. And that's a tough proposition. After somebody spits in your face and then you ask God for a blessing for them, something like that. How can that? I mean, that's tough. But if you know that God can provide all the benefits that we ever will need, then it's file that away. You can overcome things like that. Thank you so much for your comments and your participation. Be sure and fill out or pick up one of next week's lessons.